Welcome to the MS Dev Show, a brand new podcast for Microsoft developers covering Azure, Windows, cross-platform development tools, and more. I'm Jason Young with my co-host, Carl Schweitzer. This is episode number one, where Carl and I talk about the development news from Build 2014. So I put together a list on my blog, whytechie.com. So if you take a look at that, I divide it up into three different categories. We have Windows Phone, Azure, and Windows specifically. So I know the first one is definitely something that you're very interested in, Windows Phone. Lots of good stuff there. Cortana was the biggest one. So did you want to talk about the development side of Cortana a little bit?
Sure, yeah. A lot of people are really interested in Cortana with a lot of reason to. I mean, it's something very exciting. It compares well against Siri and against Google Now. There's a lot of, you know, comparisons with the platforms. But one of the things that I think developers should especially take note of is a lot of the APIs that exist for Cortana, how you interact with her, already exist. Mm-hmm. The one that I have a lot of experiences is with the voice command definitions. In order to have the phone understand what you're saying, you create this XML that lists all of the commands out. Now, of course, Microsoft has updated it, made it a lot easier. You don't have to put quite as much in the voice command definitions. It can figure out a little bit more on its own. However,
yeah, I was curious about that. So in the previous version, you'd sort of build up, you know, a pattern. You know, you put in a command and you say, hey, I'm going to say these words, and then there's going to be kind of a placeholder here. Listen to what I say, and then that matches, and then you can process that. So, have you looked at what the XML looks like in the new version?
Yep, it is a little bit different. A lot of it is very similar. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they allow you to have a little bit more flexibility and words like this, but not necessarily structured out completely. Because before, if you wanted to just capture some random text, it would do its best to translate that for you, and it would just mm-hmm. hand it off to you. But now you can have it match on a group of action words.
Okay.
And that allows for the natural language processing to kind of you know, handle that a little bit more automatically, but you still have to create the same voice command definition, with the new updates, of course. Okay. And then you actually integrate it the same way on app startup. You say, hey, this is where my VCD is. And then you tell it where to navigate to, in the definition. And then once you get there, you still receive in. Now, what's cool with Cortana and what it gives you is there's two ways to interact with Cortana. By voice, or you could type it in.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty slick.
And one of the things that they give you context for, and if you look at the build videos, they repeat this over and over again. They want you to get this right. If you talk to Cortana, they want you to keep speaking back. Mm-hmm. If you type to Cortana, they want you to provide text or just on-screen stuff without additional noise or voice. So
I won't look like the crazy person in the airport that keeps talking to my phone and having to repeat myself?
Yep, unless you want to. You can be that crazy person, but they took what was already there and they made it better. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the common theme that you see across Windows Phone. They were listening to everybody. They took their feedback and they just rocked it and put their own spin on it. They didn't just copy Siri. They didn't copy Google Now. They did it their own way.
Yeah, that's what I put on my blog. I said, Siri plus Google Now plus developer extensibility equals Cortana. So did you have... did you have an iPhone at one point?
Yes.
Because I was real big, you know, I was a real big iPhone guy, and I used Siri whenever it came out, and you know, just to give you some background on that, you know, Apple purchased that from another company. They proceeded to neuter it. They took out a ton of features, and they've slowly been adding those back in. But what I found frustrating was I could say something like, you know, read my text messages. And it would read them, and then I would say, read my email, and it's like, I can't read your email, I don't have permission. And you do things like, add an appointment for Saturday, and it would add it, and you say, well, delete that appointment. It didn't have permission to delete, you know, its own appointment that it created. So it looks like, from what I saw at Build, that Cortana has, not necessarily more permissions, but it's much more,
much more flexible, and the fact that there is that developer extensibility, I think, is going to make it 100 times more powerful. And it's not, you're not going to run into that wall the first 10 minutes that you start using it.
And what I really liked is the story that they had behind that, you know, with, you know, we went out and we talked to the personal assistants and we found out what they did and how they did it. Mm-hmm. And in the phone, they actually, you know, explained, we have a notebook, and it's called a notebook because that's what actual personal assistants do. Mm-hmm. And they tweak it a little bit so it allows us to control what Cortana knows or doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that is really great. That showed how much thought they put into this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just another Me Too feature like a lot of people could have implemented.
Right. So I've talked to a few people about Cortana, and their number one observation, the number one good thing that they had to say, was that they were actually happy that it made mistakes on stage because they knew that it was real. And I've actually heard that from, I think, 3 people now. So that was, you know, that was actually a real demo up on stage of the technology. Now, obviously Microsoft doesn't have the same advantage that Google had. You know, Google was running, what was it, 1-800-GOOG-411 for years, recording people's voices and using that to build up their voice recognition so that they could power their services. So, you know, in my experience, Google really has the voice recognition nailed. Apple does a pretty good job of it. I'm curious to see how Cortana performs, but I think it's going to improve quickly, even if it's not that great. But from what I've seen, it looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and as a Windows Phone user since nearly the beginning, what's nice is their voice is both on device and through Bing services as well. And because of that, it's been very noticeable when they've made upgrades to their voice recognition, because there's times where all of a sudden it recognizes, you know, 2 or 3 times more than it used to. And since it's continuing on with that same architecture, it's going to be even better than it was, and it's going to keep improving.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So some of the, not just the voice recognition, but the responses, some of them are completely canned. It's not that the actual text and then the text-to-speech is canned, but there's actually recorded responses, so they're not really computerized at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you know if those are streaming down to the device. I mean, I can't imagine they're actually stored on there. So those actually getting pulled down on demand?
Yes, they are. Okay. And the actress that actually does Cortana in the Halo video games, she recorded quite a few of those canned ones, but also enough other ones so that the Cortana app itself can generate pretty realistic sounding responses. And I thought that she sounded really good too.
Right. Oh, definitely. Sounds great. So keep just going through the list of features here. There's a ton of good stuff, and I'm excited to get this. I don't know if you saw Joe Belfiore. He had a tweet yesterday. He's just been getting bombarded on Twitter asking when people are going to get access to this thing. And he said he was a little elusive. He said, not this week. He said, check back next week. So I have high hopes that we're going to see something next week through the developer preview. Do you want to explain real quick like the easiest way to get into that developer preview? Because there's a trick to it. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yes, I am. So if you go to the Windows App Studio website, they have anybody can sign up for it. You just use your Microsoft ID. Once you log in, you are by essence a developer at this point. Mm-hmm. So once you have that, you can download an app in the Windows Phone Store called the Developer Preview app, and you log into that with your same Microsoft ID that you signed into that website with, and as soon as the preview is released for developers, it'll be available for you when your phone next checks for its updates.
Right. So I did some reading online, and people were saying that, you know, basically at this point, the servers are getting, the update servers are getting load tested because everybody is hitting check for updates. So I think that's why Joe put that tweet out, so that people would settle down a little bit.
Yeah. Microsoft also did previously release, before Joe Belfiore announced it, that it would happen in the first half of April. Okay. And he just further clarified that it's going to be next week. So you look at that, it means Monday or Tuesday.
Okay. Well, that pretty much narrows it down. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm expecting Tuesday, but Monday would work for me as well. So yeah, so let me keep going through the features here. So Action Center and Notification Center. So this is pretty slick. So you basically pull down from the top. You get quick access to some of those features. Mm-hmm. And now you don't get the phantom vibrate where you can't figure out where that's coming from. So that one was an obvious one that needed to be in there. The keyboard, that one is great. We're now the world record holder for the fastest keyboard by a few seconds. That thing is great. I've heard from everybody who's used it so far that it is even more amazing than what it looks like. So I'm really anxious to try that out.
One thing that's kind of interesting is it works on the emulator as well with your mouse.
Oh, but really?
If you have a touch screen, it works as well. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't have a touch screen on my computer, but I remoted in from one of my tablets, and the keyboard works just fine through a remote desktop on the emulator.
So you're bringing up a good point. If you're an MSDN subscriber, you can actually log in today, grab Visual Studio 2013 Update 2.
Actually, you don't even need to be an MSDN subscriber. You can get the Windows Phone Express. Mm-hmm. And then just download the emulators. It's a separate download that are free on dev.windowsphone.com.
Oh, well, there you go. So you can get your hands on this today if you want to, just not on your phone. That's pretty cool. So some other features, quiet hours, that's a must. It's going to take me about 3 weeks to get out of the habit of putting my phone on vibrate whenever I go to bed.
Now this is the one feature that when I heard that it came to Windows 8.1, mm-hmm. something really clicked for me. I mean, we heard all this talk about the merging of the OSs for quite some time now.
Yep.
And as soon as I saw this come to Windows 8.1, it just hit me that
it's the same feature.
It's coming to Windows Phone 8.1. Mm-hmm. And you know, this happened last fall. And I just at that point started looking at all the new features in Windows 8.1. And you could go down the list of the features that they announced for Windows Phone.
Yep.
And it's all there.
Yep. No, you got it. Yeah. It's, you can really start to, it's really starting to surface that that conversion or that convergence. Another one you can you'll be able to store applications on your SD card. That's a pretty major one. So personally, I've never had the need to do that. I have a 32 gig device. I have the Lumia 1520, but right now I use Plex quite a bit. And if mm-hmm. you go into the Plex app and you try the new offline syncing capability, it gives you sort of a nasty message complaining that it can't store to the SD card, so you really have limited space for making videos available offline on there. So I haven't checked into it. Have you seen anything as far as applications being able to access the SD card now?
Yeah, well, one of the things, I haven't played with that directly, but one of the things I think this is really I'm excited for mm-hmm. is for, you know, the Lumia 520 is the number one selling phone in the world.
Right.
And those are very small memory devices. I have one, mm-hmm. And that it's maxed out. I can't install anything new on there. Mm-hmm. But SD cards are cheap. If you can start installing on the SD cards, that's going to be huge, especially for those developing, nations and people who can't afford.
Right, who don't get subsidized phones. So does the 520 mm-hmm. have an SD card reader?
Yes.
Wow,
yep.
that's pretty amazing because there's not many phones that do The big flagship, the 1520 has it, but I didn't realize that the 520 has it. The 520 is amazing. $60 off contract. That thing is amazing.
And you can occasionally get it for even less. It's a great deal.
Yeah. When I break my 1520, I think I'm going to have to get one of those. IE11, including WebGL support, but just IE11 in general, I think is pretty big. Finally getting us up to the, feature parity with the desktop browser. So that one, it's going to take time to realize how big of a deal that one is. I know there's also inline video support within the browser, which is pretty slick. So if you go to YouTube, you hit play, it doesn't have to jump into that other browser.
I've heard that the YouTube app gets a lot from having IE11, and because of that, I've heard that from people who have played with it says that it's really amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking if what you said before, what you said before is true, we're getting more and more convergence. The web browser in Windows 8 versus 8.1 was a big leap forward. So I'm thinking that the phone has, a similar leap as far as going from 8 to 8.1. so that, yeah, I can see how that could really improve that type of scenario. Do you know if there's anything in there for when you're playing a video or even a podcast or something like that? Right now, you have to hit the forward and back buttons. Is there any kind of seek or scrubbing? Have you seen
there,
anything
there
like
is,
that?
There is scrubbing. So if okay. in the emulator, you can there's the podcast app that comes with it by default.
Yep.
If you just plug in a feed or you do a search for your favorite podcast, mm-hmm. hit play, it'll stream it by default, mm-hmm. and the scrubber is there.
Excellent.
So that's how I've played with it.
So
yeah,
if
it
I
works
made a
really well.
Yeah, if I made a list of all my frustrations with Windows Phone, I think they've all been addressed with this update, so this is great.
I think that was their goal. Anything that there was, they checked it off the list.
Right. Bluetooth LE. That support is in there, so devices like Fitbit, hopefully those will start syncing, so that's pretty sweet. That'll be interesting to see what developers do with that one. VPN support, that's major for enterprise. Windows is now free for any screen under 9 inches, so that's great because it removes that barrier, that psychological barrier, thinking that, you know, there's the Microsoft tax on a phone or a small device.
And if you look at that as well, too, I mean, the first several years, there's really only been a handful of manufacturers that have made Windows Phone devices. As soon as they announced that, they also announced like a dozen more manufacturers.
Right, right. Yeah, so that's going to be really interesting.
So that's really going to push the adoption worldwide as well.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's exciting. There's not many people that, you know, don't see this as a real force in one way or another. So that's great. Let me see what else I got here. In-app purchases can be shared. That's going to be pretty sweet. That's going to save me some money. So if you buy the app on the phone or on the Windows desktop under your account, you'll be able to share that between the two. You don't have to repurchase. Same with in-app purchases.
Mm-hmm.
Geofencing support.
That's one of my favorite APIs that they added right there.
The geofencing?
Yeah, because if you look at what you can do with geofencing, what that is for those mm-hmm. who don't know is you can describe a physical area, you know, a whole plot, not just a point. And when you enter or leave the boundaries of that, it can trigger events to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at services like If This Then That or what you can even already, possible integration with Cortana, you could say, hey, Cortana, when I get to work, and you could define work as, you know, the entire property line.
Exactly, exactly.
Then do this. You know, when I leave work, you know, text my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of things that all those different kinds of services that already exist could tap into that. So I think that's one of the most interesting, or what could lead to some of the most interesting apps on the platform.
Yeah, and the best part from a developer perspective is you don't have to talk to the GPS and say, you know, what are my coordinates, and then start doing polygon calculations or anything like that. I mean, you were literally setting up, you know, here is the point, here's the radius, and you know, give me an event, wake my application up whenever I'm in this area. And it's a really nice way of doing it from a development standpoint. No
mm-hmm.
math involved. Wi-Fi sense, this one is pretty huge. If this one works as advertised, this is really a killer feature. So the you know, I was just in a hotel this past week. And my experience with hotel Wi-Fi, you end up putting in some kind of code on a web portal. You know, connect to Wi-Fi, you get a web portal, you have to do some sort of login, and then it also ends up timing out. And the device doesn't always necessarily notice that it timed out. So, you know, your applications might die, but if you go into a browser, you'll get that portal again. So I don't know if you've had this experience. This happens to me all the time.
Where I'm working right now, they have it so you have to type in the username and password in the browser.
Okay.
And then it stays there as long as it's connected to the Wi-Fi, but if you leave for lunch and come back.
Then you drop off, huh?
Drop off, and if you forget about it, you start streaming something, well, all of a sudden your data usage spikes for, you know.
Yeah. So the problem I've had with it is if it's downloading a podcast and it's halfway through that podcast and then it loses the Wi-Fi, it won't continue to download over the data connection, and I've seen glitches there where that particular file gets corrupted and it doesn't re-download it. So that auto login could help avoid that type of issue, because it can continue, you know, whenever it comes back into range and automatically connect, just like it would at my house. So that one's huge. And then also password sharing with friends. So, you know, if I decide to put you in my quote-unquote inner circle, if I tell Cortana to put you in my inner circle, in her notebook. You come over to my house and my device knows my Wi-Fi password. It'll actually send it over to your device. You can't look at it, but you can actually use my home Wi-Fi. So I think that's going to be great as well. Cause like I said, anybody who comes over that's, you know, like my friend on Facebook or something like that, they can just automatically get secure access.
Yeah, that's really cool, especially if you have a hard password, you know, because you want to be secure. It's hard telling people, you know, okay, lowercase I, uppercase, you know. Okay, now do the pound symbol.
Yeah, I think mine is about 30 or 40 characters, so I really don't like typing that one in. What else we got here? There's some enterprise features around encrypting email, not necessarily too exciting. One thing that I'm curious if you have any insight into this is the ability, you know, while you're on a call to switch over to a Skype call. What I'm curious about is how that works. Is that seamless, or does it, you know, do you sort of drop out of that call for a minute? I'm curious how this works.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works, although I have been told right now it's defaulted to Skype. However, okay. It is not limited to Skype. You can switch, any third party can, that registers a video service, once they implement it, they can be eligible to, yep.
That's pretty nice. It's definitely a much more open platform because, you know, the iPhone would certainly never let you do that.
Yep.
Battery sense, this one is also going to be huge. So if your battery is draining for whatever reason, I haven't had any issues with that in the past few months, but if your battery is draining unusually fast, you can go in there, buy application. I took a look at this one when I was out at Build. I actually looked at one of the 8-1 phones, and that was the first thing I went for. Mm-hmm. Cause that's just huge. Now, that being said, on the 1520, this thing has, from what I can tell, it's got a nuclear power plant embedded in it, so it's impossible to drain the battery.
That is an amazing battery on that device.
Yeah, I could, if I didn't use it much, I could see this thing going for a few days. I've watched 6 hours of video in one day and had it last, 6 hours in one day, and that only used 50% of my battery. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that relates to battery sense that really becomes important in Windows 8.1, they're increasing all of the memory caps as well, okay. As well as the number of background tasks that can go at a time. I know that is now up to 20.
Wow.
I think right now it's at 15 for the high-end devices and as low as 6 for the Lumia 520. Mm-hmm. So with them raising the caps and the amount that can go on, it's really important that they have something like battery sense. So if there is one app that's troublesome, you can throttle it back.
Right. So does that actually give you some control, or is it really just monitoring?
It allows you to prevent that app from running in the background.
Okay.
So right now you have the battery saver feature. Mm-hmm. What it kind of does is it turns a per app basis, giving you that battery or that battery saver feature.
I gotcha. Yeah, because that's really what I want. I want it to identify a naughty app and automatically handle that for me. And I know it does to some extent.
Yeah, and on top of it, you can also say that this app can always run even when battery saver is enabled. Mm-hmm. So you also get that extra. You can say, hey, I want more power for this app all the time.
Mm-hmm. So last thing on my list for Windows Phone, new Nokia phones announced. Are any of these getting you excited?
Well, what I think is really interesting is the Lumia icon that came out on Verizon is essentially the 930 that was announced, but in colors.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Lumia 1520 in a smaller package with a slightly smaller battery. Other than that, the hardware is just about identical.
So the only thing that it's missing is glance.
Yep.
And I put this out on Twitter today, but I actually found out now why some of these phones don't have glance. So the Icon does not have glance, and the 930 don't have glance, and I think there might even be a couple other models. Mm-hmm. They don't have something called display memory. And all I can infer from that is there's something with the ability to, you know, send over, a picture to display on the screen, and then the phone itself is able to go into a little bit lower power state, and the display itself is able to retain the image on there. And, so I think it's a battery life thing. If it doesn't have that display memory and the phone had to keep, basically pumping out the display, I think you'd have battery issues without that feature. So that was an interesting decision on the icon.
I mean, that is a killer feature, but I mean, I think that also has something to say for the rest of the hardware that's in there. If they skimped on the high-end feature of the screen, that pretty much means everything else about that phone is top-notch.
So anything else about Windows Phone? I think that rounds it out pretty good. I'm really excited.
Yeah, we hit the high points on that, and as somebody who's always been enthused about it, I'm pretty excited. I mean, I think that people coming from, you know, the iOS camp or the Android camp really don't have any cheap shots to take at Windows Phone anymore.
Yeah. So let me ask you kind of a question from, you know, just kind of a surprise question here. Mm-hmm. So if somebody sat you down today and they said, hey, we want to build Windows Phone 9, what do you want in there, Carl? Do you have any thoughts? I'm pretty happy right now.
Well, right now, not having able to have it on a device and play with it, you know, it's a little hard to say what's missing from it at this point. But one thing that I've been very, you know, pleasantly surprised with Windows Phone throughout the years is they've always kind of done things different than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like one of the new features we didn't bring up with that, the wallpaper on the tiles. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody else has wallpaper behind the tiles. It's not anything huge or mind blowing, but it's, you know, their own little differentness, their own little take on it that, right. And keeping that personality, I think is very important because you don't want to blend into the crowd.
Right. Yeah. I think Windows Phone is about getting work done, but also having, you know, style and not feeling, you know, I think the iPhone feels a little, I don't know if that's the right word, but sort of industrial now, you know, and I really see iOS as just an app launcher. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole point is it's all about the apps, and that's why for the iPhone to remain dominant, they need to keep saying, hey, we have all the apps, we have all the apps, we have all the apps. Because when that's no longer true, and I think we're already in the middle of that, they're not maintaining their app dominance. You know, they're losing their competitive edge there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk about the apps, I mean, you look at it. I mean, a few years ago we didn't have all the apps. Now all the top apps are on Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. If you go to the beginning of Windows Phone, we have right now on Windows Phone what iOS had 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, right. I mean, the amount of time it's taken for the platform to get to where it's at is at the fastest increase out of all of them.
Right.
So if they could just keep up that momentum and keep pushing it, they're not going to have even that argument anymore. However, there's still some of that mind share that, you know, people who aren't aware of that just keep saying they don't have the apps without even knowing that they do.
Yeah, I've been amazed. I listened to the last episode of Twit, and it's Leo Laporte. He's got he also has Windows Weekly where he talks to Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott. And on Windows Weekly, he's usually a little bit more positive on Windows Phone, but then whenever he gets onto Twit, he's usually kind of down on it. And I've seen a huge shift in that. He's starting to stand up for Windows Phone and saying, hey, this is definitely a viable platform. Like you can't argue with it anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a huge turning point because I think the tech industry in general is finally coming to that conclusion. You know, they're actually looking at it and saying, hey, you know, the things that we thought were missing, you know, aren't really missing anymore. So this is a serious contender. So that's good because you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be sitting on a platform that's, doesn't have any mind share. And, so it's good to be on a platform where there's a lot of really dedicated people that really love the OS. So should we talk about Azure?
Yeah.
So Azure, so the biggest thing that came out, new portal. Have you seen the new portal?
Yes, I have. I went digging in it immediately.
So the new portal is pretty awesome. So the point of the new portal, you know, I think a lot of people are probably thinking like, why is there a new portal already? You know, first there was the Silverlight portal, then there was the HTML-based portal, which improved that, you know, significantly. And now it seems like we didn't have that one very long, and now we all already have a brand new portal. So the idea behind the new portal is integrating a lot of different products. So Visual Studio Online was sort of a separate product where you could, you know, it was basically TFS, hosted TFS, you know, Team Foundation server, where, you know, it's a system that can do builds, does source control, those types of things. So that's integrated in. The billing is integrated in. It integrates in a project that's called Monaco, which is, you know, an online version of Visual Studio itself. So you can actually do some development up there. And it's actually becoming a pretty Visual Studio, the actual code editor up there is actually becoming pretty respectable. There's even a command line. You got Git support, those types of things. But what the new portal really does, it brings it all together. It gives you, you know, all this information in one place. It gives you just, it's really about integrating everything and rethinking Azure now that all these pieces are coming together. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think it's going to take some time to replace the old portal, completely, just like it did in the last transition. But, I'm pretty excited. So I don't know if you caught that at Build. They had mentioned, that they, you know, a lot of people are starting to use this for DevOps. You know, and they have like mm-hmm. they'll have their daily scrums, and they pull up the Azure dashboard, and it's really giving them the health of their system.
Yeah, so, and with the way that it's laid out now, you can definitely see how they're tailoring it to support that as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let me see some other big announcements. Websites, free SSL certs for websites. That one is pretty huge. And I should point out as well, because there's this Heartbleed bug that's in OpenSSL. So Microsoft has come out and said, you know, hey, we are not affected by that bug, because we have our own implementation, and you know, Azure and all the related services are unaffected. And obviously, if you're putting some kind of OpenSSL on top of that, or your application on top of it runs OpenSSL, then you might have problems. But it was good to see that, at least in this particular case, it was immune from that. So free SSL certs, Java support, which I know some people are waiting for. And then
I'm okay without it.
Same here. In fact, I still have the dialogue on my screen. You know, Java would like to update. It comes up every time I restart my computer, and it's, I'd love to uninstall it, but I think WebEx still uses it.
No. Well, I've been doing Android development, so I'm stuck with it.
Okay. a lot of services went general availability, like Autoscale, which I've been using in production anyway. But I don't have any fear. Traffic Manager went GA. Are you familiar? Have you used Traffic Manager, Carl?
No, I haven't.
So it's an interesting service. So first of all, it has a pretty high SLA. I think it's 99.95% SLA. And what it lets you do is you can get a single endpoint that can either load balance across different Azure data centers. You know, so if you have a website set up or a service, you can actually load balance that endpoint across those other ones. You can also do failover. So you can say, I want to use this data center as my primary, and I have this other data center that if the first one goes down for whatever reason or it loses connectivity, switch over to the next one. And then there's another option which will give you the closest one. So if you have multiple data centers configured with this thing, it will just pick the one that's geographically closest to you. So that's pretty huge.
Mm-hmm.
SQL databases, the size increased. We from 150 gigs up to 500. So that's kind of
huge. That's
huge
for a lot of people.
Yeah. Now,
a lot of enterprises.
Yeah. Now I would say that if you plan on using 500 gigs in the Azure SQL database, I would second guess that decision. That it seems like a bad idea. There are other storage mechanisms that are definitely better for scaling in this case. Here's the biggest one. So price drops, compute. So basically virtual machines and the like all dropped by up to 35%. That was huge. Storage dropped by up to 65%. So where this started, Google sort of waged a war here. They just had massive price cuts on their storage, and then Amazon pretty quickly followed suit, and then Azure came along and beat that pricing. And I didn't realize that I don't know if it's an official statement, but it's on the blog site that I went to. It mentions that you know, we're committed to having the lowest price on that.
Yeah.
And,
Microsoft,
so any, Yeah, go ahead.
Microsoft a few years ago said that for any commodity service that Amazon has, they will drop their prices anytime that Amazon does.
Yeah, and that's great. So, I mean, we're always going to have the, we're always going to have the best pricing. You know, it's because I think there's some people, you know, whenever you see a big price drop like that, you know, you start looking at jumping ship for cost, but, they're all going to have relatively the same pricing. So cost doesn't really become a huge factor there. Couple other things. Let's see here. What do we got? Azure Active Directory Premium went GA. So that's handy. I know that, the Windows Developer Show talked about that one, quite a bit, but it's a great way to take an application, throw in a login dialog and start to authenticate against other providers. And now that, that service is just really starting to mature. So I recommend taking a look at that one for sure. I actually have an app that I was working on recently that I integrated that in. And it was, once you get everything set up, it's almost literally one line of code in your application to wire that up. So I definitely recommend looking at that one. I think that's it on the Azure side. Next up is Windows. Lots of interesting stuff here. So, first one on the list here. Side-loaded apps have the ability to call into existing .NET code. Did you catch that one?
No, I missed that.
Okay, so this one's interesting. Now, again, it's only for side-loaded apps, which actually makes sense because in a side-loaded app, that's your only chance to have, code that is not part of that application separated out. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you buy an app through the Windows Store, it can only pull down Windows Store code. That makes sense. So what this lets you do, if you sideload an app on a device, and enterprises really like to do this, if you sideload a modern app on that device, you can actually have .NET code installed along with it, and it can actually call into any .NET code. So what the demo that they gave was actually calling ADO.NET from a modern app. It was pretty cool. Let's see here. So here's the big one, universal apps. So I downloaded Visual Studio, and I know that you did as well.
Yep.
This is huge. So this is sort of what we've all been waiting for. So you can create a new project, or you can migrate your existing project to this. But what you get is you will get a project for your Windows Phone app. You'll get a project for your Windows app. Eventually you'll have a project for Xbox, and then you have another project that is your shared code. And it enforces, you know, it helps you structure your code in that way so that the actual specific code that you have to write for Windows and for Windows Phone is minimal. So is there anything else you want to talk about there? Have you played around with this yet?
Just a little bit. Not enough to get anything too terribly useful out of it, but, mm-hmm. I mean, there's numbers out there between 80 and 90% of the APIs are the same between Windows Phone and Windows mm-hmm. Store apps. And that just makes it so much more easy to, when you have all the code that's the same, for the apps to be written. So right. One of the problems with PCLs, which kind of was, you know, the promises of a few years ago to get closer to this, is once you started at putting in all the different scenarios that you wanted, it just limited the APIs that you could even call.
Right.
So you were limited to just, you know, very simple business logic.
Yeah.
And this really opens up the doors to a lot more different things that you can do.
Yep. So you brought up some good points. So the first one, so I've heard a couple different numbers as well. One of the numbers I heard though is that it's actually the API convergence is above 90%. I think that's up from somewhere like 50%. So that is huge.
It, you know, it was 30%.
A 30%, okay. Well, then it doesn't really matter if we're going to 80 or 90. That's still a huge increase.
Yep.
So the ability, you know, when interacting with things like the GPS, having the exact same function calls in there, that's huge because that saves you a ton of time testing, you know, just across the board. So one thing to expand on the PCL support, so you were right on. So what ends up happening in PCL is you end up writing to the least common denominator, right? There's a couple things going on in the shared project. So the first is there's no binary output on a shared project. I wasn't sure if you were aware of that.
Yep.
So a PCL will actually give you a DLL, whereas a shared project is actually, it's really tooling magic. You know, whenever you hit compile, it's sort of doing a merge on that shared project in those other two projects. And one of the benefits of that too is that you can put conditional compilation in there. So if there is an API that's different, and it's probably at this point, the API for the two devices are probably different for a reason just because of different capabilities. At that point, you can say, if it's a Windows phone, I want to run this code. If it's just plain Windows, I want to run this other code. So that's really powerful. And then conceivably, you can also set up a pattern where this can be used in conjunction with a PCL. I don't think it replaces one, but I would still recommend trying to get as much code as you can in a PCL. You put, sort of that remaining business logic into the shared app, and then you have your XAML in the other files. And the reason that you want to maximize your code in the PCL is because you want to, and PCL, for those that don't know, it's Portable Class Library. The reason that you want to put as much code in there is if you start to go cross-platform on iOS and Android. So you can actually take that PCL DLL and use it with something like Xamarin. They added support for that a while back. So that's going to give you maximum code reuse. And the picture now is really great. The fact that you can take C# and write that for, almost all the same code for Windows Phone, for Windows, and then the majority of that code you can also take to iOS and Android, that's really powerful. And that makes the platform, very interesting in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, I don't know if you saw this. This one is interesting as well. Project N, or .NET native compilation. So basically, being able to take your .NET store app and compiling that essentially into native code. And I watched a Channel 9 video on this, and there was an interview, and he was saying, the interviewee was saying, hey, you're going to get C++ level performance. And there were people emailing in questions saying, are we really going to get that? Really, 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 really? And he said, yes, you really are. You really are going to get C++ performance. So it's like 40% better startup time. And then I think, I don't know what the percentage was as far as runtime, but it's significantly better performance across the board, basically for free.
Yeah, and in that video too, I believe they showed you how you can compile that already. So it's just you check a checkbox.
It's available in the UI of
in the Visual Studio, and then you right click on your project, and it'll be enabled, and you can select that as your compile option.
Right, right. So another big thing, and this kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier. So Roslyn, which is a compiler as a service. This is basically the new .NET compiler, and this thing is, we announced that it actually went open source, and it also enables just a ton of new scenarios. But the fact that that's open source ties into what I was saying before, because now this can be used for, Xamarin could actually take this code, and instead of having to keep the mono project in line with .NET, they could actually compile it against, true .NET.
Yeah. And it gives them, other things as well, because right now, you can't write VB code in Xamarin. Mm-hmm. This will give that to them immediately.
Oh, really? That's
yes.
A good point. You're right, because it compiles down to the same thing. Okay. Well, that's interesting. That's definitely a good point. Another thing that was interesting, they demoed the modern Office app, so the touch-based version of the Office application. So, a few weeks ago it was announced that you could get Office on the iPad, and now we're demoing that on, basically Surface and on Windows. That's pretty exciting. I'm excited for this to come out. And some insight into that, they were on Reddit, the team that designed OneNote and some of these Office applications. They were talking about how they developed this, and they're sharing some of the code between Mac and iPad And I thought that was really interesting. I'll probably include that in the show notes, some of the links to some of the information about how they developed that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that was open source was WinJS. So that's the platform, that's the JavaScript environment. If you want to do a HTML JavaScript application, on Windows. So you can actually take this and start to build web-based applications on top of it. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you had any interest in doing that, Carl, or if you were going to play around with this at all.
Well, one thing I thought that I heard, but I haven't been able to go back and find, is one of the possible outcomes of this is being able to get WinJS support on iOS and Android.
Right, right.
Did you hear anything about that?
I haven't heard that, but I think since it's JavaScript, I mean, it's just a matter, if you're building a web-based application, it's just a matter of including it.
Yeah.
So I would think that would be a possibility. I'm wondering, too, if it could get forked and somebody could work on that type of functionality. Yeah. Now, personally, the fact that it's going open source, I think, is interesting. It'll be, it really comes down to what the community is going to do with it. Because
mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm looking at any kind of framework for developing my application, one of the biggest metrics that I look at is user adoption, and then also, how is the, who's working on this? Who's actually adding features to it? Are they going to keep working on it? Are they going to maintain this thing? Is it going to keep improving? Now, with this one, Microsoft is behind it, so you know that the features are going to keep getting added to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, on the other side of that, what kind of community adoption there's going to be, and that's really going to determine how viable it is, and then also how interoperable it is with other things. Because in the JavaScript world, you want to be mixing a number of different libraries together. And in my experience using WinJS, it doesn't like to play nice with some other frameworks. And specifically things like Knockout, there's some adapters to get it to work, but right now it doesn't play very nice. So I'm hoping that improves.
Yeah, and it still is a young language, so hopefully that, with input from the community, that can evolve to be a very nice solution for everyone as well.
Right, right. So let's talk about updates to Windows itself. So I actually got, I've been running the update for Windows for a while. It adds a lot of functionality around keyboard and touch support, or keyboard and mouse support. So you get things like if you're in a modern app and you bring your cursor to the top of the screen, a toolbar pops down, like you would expect from a regular application. You can actually pin modern applications to the taskbar. You can right click on tiles. Some of the basic stuff. I mean, it seems like they're kind of backfilling in some of the stuff that probably should have been there, but maybe didn't make the cut on the original, couple of the first rounds in Windows 8.
And a few other features that you get with that too is like if with the music app that comes in Windows,
mm-hmm.
It comes with the play, pause, forward and back on
right.
on the app bar at the bottom of the screen as well. Just mm-hmm. like you could with like Zune on the previous versions or Windows Media Player.
Yeah.
So that's really cool too. Also being able to have that app bar at the bottom when you're in a Metro environment just lets you swap between the desktop and other apps so much more quickly.
Yeah, it feels seamless for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked remotely today and I used the Metro version of the Citrix receiver and in the past before 8.1, it was kind of a pain flipping back and forth when I, got email that I wanted to do or if I didn't like the song and needed to switch. Today, it was so much more easy. I didn't think it was going to be a huge deal, but it really is. I really think this is a really positive step forward, and I think one that a lot of people are going to, be glad that it's there now.
Yeah, so, it's one of these features where you can't just look at it or have somebody tell you about it and evaluate it. You really just have to use it. And even to me, I didn't think it was a big deal, but then, just using the computer on a day-to-day basis, it has a big impact, even though the actual changes are small. So, one thing that I find myself really wanting now was something that was announced, but I don't know if you've had this experience. I'm in an application, it's full screen, I grab onto the tool, or the title bar, and I sort of expect to, basically do like a restore, unmaximize mm-hmm. it, and then drag it into just have it be a separate window. And that's something that was announced that's going to be coming in a future update. It's not clear if it's going to be Windows 9 or if it's going to be like update 2 for Windows. But have you found yourself trying to do that, or is that just me?
Yeah. No, I agree. The Snap View, well, it is much better with, you know, since 8.1 being able to have the, you know, pick your own, you know, percentage how you want it across the screen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still is a little awkward with that window navigation on that. If they figure that out, you know, I think people are going to stop being afraid of Metro.
Right. I just want to yank that. I want to yank like the Mail app, you know, off of full screen. And I just want to drag it over and just make it smaller. Cause I, you know, I'm sitting here in front of two 27 inch monitors with massive resolution. And, I mean, honestly, I could be running, let's see, I could see myself running 16 Metro apps simultaneously, just cause I have so much real estate here. So I just keep wanting to do that. So, so that was pretty much it from Build. Only a couple other small topics. I don't know if you saw this. Well, I'm sure you saw that XP is done for. It's a goner.
Yep.
That ended a couple days ago. I saw some pictures online. I saw a screen in a shop window. It was comprised of like four big TVs, and they had the big message on there saying, you know, hey, this operating system is no longer supported. So anybody who's using that on a billboard, I'm sure, you know, like at Times Square, I know that system is blue screen before. You know, now, you know, I would seriously consider, taking care of that, upgrading that. And I keep hearing news reports too about ATMs. You know, there's like 95% of ATMs run XP.
It doesn't affect those though.
No, they're not connected to anything. I mean,
well, not only that, but they're the embedded version of XP.
Right. So they probably, you know, are missing 90% of the components that, you know, is really reducing the attack surface.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fact that, you know, they're, you know, I guess I don't understand ATM technology, but I really doubt that they're plugged into Ethernet and they're just hooked up to a cable modem and on the internet. I think that they're probably a little bit more isolated than that for security reasons. So it's really not a big deal. And, so some of the new features in 8, one that we didn't talk about was the return of the start menu. That was showed off as well. So there's really no reason to go to not go to Windows 8. People are just out of reasons. I know somebody on Facebook was saying, you know, hey, I don't like Windows 8. And I put a, you know, they said, I just don't like how it works. And I said, I started running through the list of features. I said, well, it's got a new task manager. You have, you know, it performs better. You know, there's so many features. Have you touched a Windows 7 machine in a while, Carl?
Yes. Where I'm working at currently, they're natively on Windows 7. And it's like going backwards in time. You know,
that's when you realize how advanced Windows 8 really is.
Yeah.
Some of the niceties that are small.
Yeah. And even before 8.1, I mean, what I would tell people is you don't have to use the stuff you don't like. The only thing that was forced upon you at the time was the start menu or the start screen.
Yeah.
And, one of the things I tell people who ask me for advice, you know, they're like, should I go with Windows 7? And really what I tell them is Windows 8, there was a lot of things to complain about, but Microsoft is being so responsive with Windows 8.1 and the update and, you know, they've showed us the roadmap that, you know, I tell people they've fixed all the things that people have had complaints about. So don't be afraid of it because it's not what you think it is.
Right. Just give it a try. Just give it a try. Don't prejudge it. I think the tech industry has been rough on it, but, we'll just leave it at that. Just give it a try.
Yep.
So kind of finishing up here, I'm going to save this for next week talking about msdevshow.com, but we do have a site set up there, msdevshow.com. If you go there, that's where you can get the latest episodes, the show notes, all the information. Next week I'm going to talk about how we built that. I think it's kind of interesting how that whole thing is set up, and we need to talk about that a little bit. You did want to talk about, you set up the email for us, which is feedback@msdevshow.com. If you have any questions, comments, anything like that, go ahead and send it that way. So Carl, you set that up, 3 days ago?
Yes.
And, what was the news yesterday?
So Yeah, they announced that effective immediately, that Outlook.com is going to end free custom domain names. So right now we are using Outlook, and you can go to feedback@msdevshow.com to access that. It goes to Outlook.com, and you can no longer register for new sites. And for people who have existing things, you cannot create any new accounts.
Right.
So it is a response to Google. Google made a very similar announcement last December, but it's one that, as you depend upon that, if you want to do things yourself, it's less and less options. It's harder and harder to get your free branded email anymore.
Yeah. So
luckily we snuck in under the wire.
Yep. Yeah, so we got one email address on there. Now, just to be clear, I saw a comment on Twitter that was just incorrect. They were asking about, they thought that related to custom email addresses for live accounts, and I don't believe that's affected. Like, if you want a live account,
you can still alias.
Yeah, and you can still use your own, existing email address for that. It doesn't affect that. This only affects if you're running, your own domain and you want to add accounts to that, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So I think that's about it. Anything else, Carl, before we wrap it up?
No, you can reach me at Carl Schweitzer on Twitter, and I also run the website WP Dev Guy.
Oh yeah, that's a great site. Everybody should go there. You're doing great work there.
Yeah, thanks.
And I'm at ytechie on Twitter and ytechie.com. That's ytechie.com. And that's all we have then.
All right. See you next time, Jason.
Yep, bye.